Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the IT News Podcast. Our guest this week is Pet Circle's CTO, Dennis Hochter. As Australia's largest online pet supply store, Pet Circle is investing heavily in technology, including to support a trial of fully owned last mile delivery services, as well as in digital systems that make it easier to interface with its courier partners elsewhere in Australia, and specifically to have more visibility into its supply chain. Now, some of this work has involved uplifting an existing cloud environment to track data more granularly. Behind the scenes, the company is also embracing infrastructure as code and automation to increase velocity and speed to value. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Can you perhaps give us a quick introduction to Pet Circle and to its technology operations in terms of the size of the team, the structure of the team, and so on?
Pet Circle was founded in 2011, and we're Australia's largest online pet supply store. We're more than just a retail store. We consider ourselves an integrated pet care platform. Today, we have 24/7 free online vet advice and tele-services. We obviously have e-commerce at the core of the value proposition for our customers, but we also do that with an auto-delivery subscription model that can ensure customers get the flexibility and confidence of the right products on their doorstep when they need them for their pets. And we've also, through COVID and beyond, really focused on that last mile for our customers, taking full control there with a dedicated delivery fleet of our own, and even gone a little further in Perth, where we're running our own fleet fully, ensuring effective control of that customer experience from the point where they come online to our service all the way through to that customer's doorstep and the frequency with which they continue to get the products and value from us. We have, supporting all of that, over 700 staff across fulfillment centers in Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, as I mentioned, where we're trialing that own fleet, and Melbourne. And we stock over 13,000 products. One of the things in my tenure here has been that drive to really expand that range to make sure we're able to meet the needs of all those customers and pet families across the country. And why we're doing all of this is our mission is focused on being that best pet company in the world, solving any problem that pet parents have the best we can. So in my role as CTO, it's continuing to evolve how we can support that, how we can innovate and have more at a technology level and work with other business leaders to find opportunities for those pet families and problems they face.
Just for the specific technology team, out of that 700 that you mentioned for the whole organization, how many of them would work in the technology domain, either under your representation or more broadly?
So for my first 3 years here, I supported a number that ranged over the time, given COVID, et cetera. We built up through COVID, given the size of demand increased, online channels, et cetera. And we went from about 30 to about 60, 65 in product and engineering. Today, I support engineering and technology and a colleague in product, running 12 people in the product space and about 54 in engineering and technology. In engineering and technology, we group ourselves in four key spaces. Those that are directly supporting the customer, our site experience, our marketing, merchandising, et cetera, our operations. So everything that supports all those fulfillment centers and that physical side of the business and all the technology to realize that. Underneath that, we've got a platform tribe of about 12 people, DevOps, site reliability, observability, and service management. And then we've got an IT operation space, given we have so many staff, especially those in the warehouse and our CX team that need a technology support on their day-to-day job tools and the physical side of the warehouse as well.
In terms of Pet Circle's technology strategy, does that align to those four key technology teams that you just mentioned, or are the strategic pillars a little bit different?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Where I was sat supporting product and engineering, I would have said simply yes, it covers those three tribes, as we call them, the customer, operations, and platform tribe, focused on how we're helping them shop, how we're helping them deliver, and then the technology behind it. That said, as we've gone through the last year and we've grown further as a business, I've actually got a rebalance in that strategy where we're trying to get closer to our customers' needs and wants physically. We're also trying to understand that in what it should mean for our organization structure. So really today focused in three areas as it relates to the customer and technology strategy, with a fourth internal for the teams. And those three areas for the customer are really about how we acquire and engage our customers. So that's so much about the offsite experience in e-commerce. It's a huge area and very important to how do we make people understand the value and opportunity of shopping and being supported by our services. Then on-site, that shopping and services experience. I mentioned briefly earlier the 24/7 vets. That's an experience and an offering that many don't know about. It's a free value proposition that's hidden there. So we're working harder to make that visible to customers, as well as continuing the innovation in that core shopping experience. And then last, but definitely not least, is all that delivery side of things. The heavy lifting on the physical side at scale with 70,000 orders and growing per week, there's constant expectation that we can get through that successfully, no matter what surprises happen, either through weather or through surge in demand or other things that we've obviously seen over the last couple of years. That delivering to customer is something we've been doing well, but the consistency of it is something we spend a lot of time working on. Then inside in the teams, it's really about how we're partnering with the business and how we're keeping a balance between always on and speed to value. Those are the core three that we as a technology team then are thinking about how we work strategically, how we're approaching the different asks of the business and the opportunities for delivering to the customer.
There's a bunch of things to dig out of there, but just firstly, just on the strategy side of things, on what sort of horizon are you looking at or working on with some of these pillars? Is it like a 3-year, 5-year, a rolling kind of strategy? How does it play out?
Wholly, it's definitely a rolling strategy because we don't stop. As soon as we get the right strategy in front of us and we get stuck in, we're executing on that. And then within a couple of quarters, we're talking about the next opportunity and need. At that really whole of business level for what technology has been supporting over the last couple of years, it's been very simply focused on range initially and driving that set of experiences for customer through having broader offerings. And internally, that meant a lot about the right tooling, the right team structure, et cetera. And that certainly hasn't finished by any means. So that continues from a technology delivery point of view. But the opportunity now for us, as we've gone from range to building the logistics, was a major focus for the last 2 years, onto thinking about the data side of things and how we have the right data in the right place. Our core strategy as we look forward and will hold for the next 5 years is how do we connect and maximize that? So from the technology seat, it really is ensuring that all those different areas that we built and we talked about at the time, making sure they were well connected and so on. But when you go to build those assets and those tools, you get that next level of understanding. So what it actually means to connect those in an effective manner, the right amount of data, not too much, not too little, the Goldilocks side of things, all of that is in front of us. And that's why the next 5 years, as you ask, that high level is really about connecting and creating the opportunity for a really smart e-commerce business to do more for customers by knowing the right context from past deliveries at the right time, from the capability of our fulfillment centers and our fleet at any given point in time. Are we offering the right service for the customer, through to what is the range that matters that we should head to next as we put limited resources into growing range and delivering the right experience? It's that balancing act, and the connected system is the focus for helping inform our business decide how to operate.
I think we should talk about this a little bit more, because I feel like I've read quite a few things in the last 6 months to a year around Pet Circle really wanting to use data more to help connect with customers. You've kind of touched a little bit on the strategy there, but I think it'd be useful to maybe just benchmark where you're at and then to talk about the step change that you're wanting to achieve, and maybe behind the scenes, the technology enablers that will enable you to move along that journey.
Definitely. It's been an interesting journey over the 3 and a bit years, where coming in, there was an existing technology system on Google Cloud that we were 1.5, 2 years into bringing across. For the majority of that time, it was understanding what we actually had there. And as we talked about the strategy just a few moments ago, it was identifying what the key areas of leverage and value for our customers were. So the logistics focus really came out of that, and we built a lot in that space. And now the focus moves on from range before logistics to the data itself. And we've taken a lot of time to transform what was a transactional focused architecture and platform in really being customer centric, but per order customer centric. We had insights off in a separate platform that could be done in isolation, but they were never connected back in. Something that we've spent the last year prototyping and creating initial value from is actually re-operationalizing that insight. And as that has come together and been proven to be valuable, the strategy is now focused on how do we have a platform that actually facilitates that. And that's where Google Cloud is really a great partner in that space, given we've moved across to Looker for our business intelligence tool, and we have a customer data platform that sits beside that that we've built ourselves. But on top of the Google tools, especially around their data environment tools, BigQuery and Cloud SQL, et cetera, we're able to get a lot more through our systems compared to when it was single monolith with early evolution of microservices that were all application centric. So the logic and intent was built there on a per customer per order basis, as I mentioned a moment ago. Now we think about things in aggregate and understanding what value information can go back into the site or can go back into operators in the business.
You mentioned just before there that you'd either inherited or you had Google Cloud in for about 1.5 to 2 years before you embarked on this upgrade work. Do you want to talk a little bit about the change that's going on with those systems? You mentioned there as well, I think, that you've adopted a new BI platform from Google Cloud as well with Looker. So it'd be useful just to understand the technology elements there.
Yeah, the technology stack as a whole is somewhat reflective of the team structure as well. There's a bit of Conway's law to some degree, or one direction versus the other. I'm always a little confused. I find it circular in terms of the reflections that come between the two. So we have two monoliths that reflect the customer experience and the site experience, and then an internal ERP that powers a huge amount of value in the business. And between that, we have a chunk of microservices. One of the reasons that actually prior to my time, but we selected Google Cloud was that alignment on our Java stack and the really strong data focus that Google has. That helped us to know that we were making the right decision, bringing our legacy technology across from a past private cloud provider and onto Google. However, as we did that, it was predominantly a lift and shift with the intent to simplify those monoliths. And through COVID, the reality was we didn't continue a formal investment in the tech debt management or the progression of that change to microservices. That had slowed down some of the areas in the application development, but with the data environment beside it, that gave us a lot more speed and control, especially as it related to analytics and getting information back into the site. The other side of things that we've heavily invested in was infrastructure as code. And while that was slow to begin with, year one was definitely a lot of proof of concepts and building on the newer services. We've really started to see that technology come in and sit under everything that we have today, meaning that releases are even smoother on top of Google Cloud. And we can see clearer lines for dependency management and data flow because we have everything captured in infrastructure as code. So it's much more declarative. And then that's fitting really nicely with the data environment as we get things circular back into those applications that are better understood now, especially on the dependency side of things. We were, like many with microservices and tech debt, stuck with a lot of spaghetti. It's not all gone away, but those two key areas, the data environment and the infrastructure as code, are really giving us a lot of leverage to simplify there. And coming back to the business and technology strategy, where we're finding we're partnering with a lot more speed to value because of those investments.
is speed to value and this idea of infrastructure as code, is this stuff that you've really tried to drive since you've come on board the organization, or is this stuff that was already strategically the direction that they wanted to go in? How did it play out?
I don't want to rehash too much about 2020 and 2021 from a macro point of view, given we've all talked so much about COVID. But the reality was I was a couple of weeks in and I definitely had that bias to infrastructure as code, and that wasn't here. So I brought that in. However, on the data side, so much of that was there already, and we just needed the right velocity and technology to be able to get there. And in between today and back then, there was 2 years of supporting pet families across the country through unusual times and building a logistics business within this broader Pet Circle business. Those were huge distractions from the core geek strategy myself and building that better platform. But at the same time, they were the right things to do for the customer, right things to do for the business. And they give us a huge area, another asset to validate that technology strategy against as we now move into having the right focus on that for the next couple of years.
And on the infrastructure as code side, how much of the effort has been in establishing the baseline engineering practices versus, say, the tooling that goes into implementing that?
Yeah, it's been a bit of both, and it should always be a lot more of both. I would say if we could do it over, we'd spend a lot more time together as engineers across the group, not just from where initially we tackled this with DevOps building a tooling set that would have a good interface and support engineers. The reality was engineers had to put their heads down and help adapt to what was going on for those couple of years. But we've really fixed a lot of that with more to do now, where we work much closer together. And the principles of engineering and the principles of why we're leaning in on infrastructure as code continue to be debated, discussed, and refined. Whereas for that period during COVID, it was just accepted that it was a side project. And a certain amount of that is always needed. You need to get your culture, your skills. If you're bringing in new faces that have the skills, you need them to work with others that have the domain expertise to cross over. But so much of that has now happened, and I'm excited that, as I said a few minutes ago, that speed to value, you can really start to see it coming through as we're actually working on a side project right now, and a squad has come together just for two sprints and is able to actually build a major feature and a core change to the technology stack, where previously that would have needed two sprints to consider and debate, four sprints to execute. Our speed to value is so much faster on top of Google Cloud. Mainly, we're using it the right way now, whereas before it was bespoke conversations, bespoke decisions for each use case. Now we have a set of patterns, and that's coming from those principles and that investment in the culture.
And just to talk a little bit about bespoke, because obviously you mentioned, I think, before that the organization runs a bespoke ERP system, which I think has been talked about in technical documentation before. But how much of that ethos kind of influences the direction that software engineering takes within the organization?
Definitely influences a huge amount. While it's easy to say we believe in the perfect solution or the right solution for the problem, we all come with natural biases. And that in and of itself has to be a strategic decision from my point of view. While I know individuals, when a certain problem presents, they're going to look to the right solution. If they don't have the agency to work in different ways or capability from past skills or understanding, then you're going to get a bespoke solution and development. And that has served the business so well over the years and will continue to. But we have to know that we're deliberately doing that at the right level. So one of the other things that we've been bringing in over the last 2 years is the right balance with IT systems, that we have our core. Today, we call it an ERP, but we have our core system, and we need to understand that that's adding value in the right areas for customers and the business, and that we have the right off-the-shelf tools that can free our engineering up to make sure that's focused on the right bespoke work, not all bespoke work. So I think that's one other change and part of that speed to value focus, that we're not one-dimensional on that, that we can actually make a choice at that engineering manager and senior level for what's the right approach to what's in front of us. If we're looking at a whole new domain, are we bringing in the right system as part of the solution, or is this a core area in our business. For example, order management is one of those areas for us where we know we need to do a lot more for customers than an average e-commerce experience. So we have a continued bias to thinking about that in a bespoke fashion. However, on the product information or asset management side of things for our site and content management, we've taken a hybrid approach where we bring another open source tool and the team actually build around and on top of that. And then in other areas, again, when it comes to finance and demand planning, there are some specialized tools out there that we may investigate instead of actually doing it as a hybrid or bespoke. So we're much more deliberate about which of those three hammers that we pick up for the given nail in front of us, rather than thinking it's just bespoke. But we hold to that's our core strength. So we're very deliberate about making a different choice.
You've mentioned logistics quite a few times, particularly at the start of the conversation, the trials that you're doing, also specifically to Google Cloud and talking a little bit about some of the technical underpinnings. Do you want to talk about the work that you're doing in the logistics space? And I feel like it's going to be a bit difficult not to mention 2020 and 2021 as potential drivers to some of the work around setting up more control over your logistics network. But I'll let you take the floor in terms of talking about that particular program of work.
Definitely. It had many phases. So interestingly, when I came on, we were very dependent on a single provider for not all, but the vast majority of our deliveries. We did have, if I recall right, 4 different courier integrations that had been built bespoke. But of that, for our customer and for our business, 70%+ was going through one. As we went into the 2 interesting years, that obviously became a risk for everybody involved. And it was something that we started to diversify. But the key thing that we did differently from a customer and a physical perspective was rather than thinking to more of the same from a depot point of view, where we have got technology that supports our people from how we get range, why we get range, all the way into the physical onboarding of suppliers and their stock through our warehouses and the pick, pack, all of that. We have control, visibility, and understanding. But when we closed the box and it was picked up, it would go off to somebody else. And not alone would it go into a van, it would go into somebody else's 4 walls. That's where we started to lose control, confidence at times when those partners were trying their best, but would have other complications and couldn't necessarily deliver on service. And we would be blind to much of that. So as we faced those interesting 2 years, we took a real focus of point to point. And that also implied, like I was saying earlier on the strategy, that we were now going to be responsible for so much more. So we leaned in and built a technology stack that supports that, that creates that full visibility for customer and operators, that integrates with both our own in year 3 of that journey. But back then, early on, it was integrating with those point-to-point providers' technology. And that's where initially, as we were talking earlier, that introduction of infrastructure as code and the data side of things were new, but we could see early value as we went to build those services, our logistics microservice, that could take those 4 courier integrations that we had and go and add another 5. As we also had to lean into not just the easy point-to-point conversation for 80% of our customers in metro area, but also what matters for the regional customers and having the right partners that could deliver accurately or even just multiple partners when there was real contention in the regional areas. We gave the business and our customers a lot more flexibility by bringing those solutions online.
So you're still outsourcing the last mile delivery to the courier companies, but you've got more points of the journey instrumented or metricated. How would you describe what you've been able to get the improvements from that?
Yeah, really good point in terms of what was it that actually changed. And first and foremost, I go to the physical. There was one less touch, and that one could have been 10 or 20 inside somebody else's 4 walls. So we simplified it physically, and then we spent the time to make sure that we took full ownership. So there's a load of other edge cases for delivery not successful, not handed over from the dock at the warehouse. All of these things that became a lot more complicated in simplifying, removing one point. There was now another 10 journeys and use cases that we were having to capture the metrics of. And we were having visibility at a driver level inside our systems for the value of customer and making sure that a truck was delivering as expected, and where it wasn't, that we were evolving the internal systems to be able to help our customer experience staff and our warehouse staff to adapt to what's actually happening to those orders. So that was the main focus. After 9 months of that with one provider, we realized many more providers were coming on. So we also stepped back and took the time to think about how we would do this in a unified pattern, because we had a bunch of different providers that spoke different languages. And unfortunately, logistics is still a space where a FTP and a static file are quite common. There are a lot more APIs in 2023 than there were in 2020, but even now there is still a percentage of that. So we had to stop and think about the data architecture so that we had a normalized construct for all these different providers, because the customer shouldn't need to care and have to think or behave differently just because their box is on somebody else's truck versus who it was on with for their last order. So we take on all that responsibility for normalizing the communications and the clarity of status for customer experience and for warehouse. And then we also have to have the reliability of the integrations, be they FTP and file-based or API. So we took on a large effort in 2021 to map and normalize all of that. And again, that was really interesting to see how we were now merging our MariaDB, our cloud SQL focus into the data environment and getting that right balance on the technology, because so much of it was led in that period of time by the urgent need of customers or getting a courier out because somebody else wasn't able to get through certain things in COVID. So we were scrambling as well as architecting as we went. And yeah, it was really impressive effort by the team and really valuable using the right tools for the problem.
And that clarity of status is a huge thing in e-commerce.
Yeah, definitely. The data visibility, it really has come on in leaps and bounds across the industry in 2020, but I know it's definitely not done as well. There's still so much more in terms of the complexity there for the different players and their tech debt, as well as the right balance for noise versus value for the customer as well, giving them the ability to see what they want to when they want to without over communicating is an interesting juggle. We've gone out with our mobile app in the last couple of months, and even that's an example of where we have to balance our email, our SMS, and our mobile notifications. We know we're going to be much more effective with the mobile notifications in the medium long term, but we're in a proof of concept stage, so we balance that through to the other technology partners we use for delivering that last mile experience in our own fleet. It's really impressive to be able to give customers live visibility on the driver side of things, but you're still making decisions on when do you communicate proactively versus you're passive and the customer can come to you. So there's a lot of e-commerce players out there trying different ways around it. I'm interested to see where we continue to innovate here in Pet Circle and elsewhere.
We've covered a huge amount of content there and a huge amount of things that might get someone excited. I'm wondering from your perspective, what's exciting you about the next sort of 12 months?
That next 12 months, I've accidentally given myself a line to that on the mobile mention. That's been a lot of work in the background through 2022, and I'm excited to see our product team and one of our engineering teams supporting the continued rollout of that. It's in a soft launch at the moment, but just like logistics was another major technology asset and value prop for our business and the huge amount of effort, like logistics side, those that are working hard on the dock in Eastern Creek, our warehouse here in Sydney and Perth and Brisbane, there's so much that goes on in that space, where now we have mobile, and that's an asset where we have to connect with our colleagues in marketing and really understand how to bring that to customers so that they're aware of it and the value, and we get the feedback right to understand what the next features are and how Pet Circle should be different in your pocket versus on the web experience, where we know already we've got the majority of our customers using us on mobile, but they use it through the web. So there are similar but different experiences. So I'm very excited to see where that goes. personally, if I think about where I'm going to invest my time and the engineering first time, it's going to be a lot more on that connected system. And given all these different assets and what we've built with Google via the infrastructure as code and the data environment, how are we going to help the business simplify big complex problems and be able to make decisions faster on where we invest, on how we operate the customer by customer experience on the site? Both of those things are on total ends of the spectrum, but they're all connected by that data environment and technology systems. So I'm very excited to see where we can get to in the next 12 months and beyond.
That was Dennis Hochter from Pet Circle. And that's the podcast for this week. We'll be back with an exciting new interview next week. Until then, you can catch all the latest headlines in Australian IT over at itnews.com.au.